according to the Buddha, the Dharma was the most important thing to follow. But you can't follow the Dharma unless you have a Sangha or a community. Because the community is who teaches you that you need to follow the Dharma. Isn't that true? Does that make sense to you? And the Sangha are who keep you honest, especially the ones you don't like or who have the bad taste to not like you. They're really the best members of the Sangha because they really teach you what you want to do. You want to be kind. It's much nicer. But in order to do that, you have to have some kind of aspiration. You have to name that you want to achieve a state where that's possible. So that's what we do. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo, I name tassa, the state, bhagavato of blessedness, arahato, breaking through the chains of suffering, sama, fully, sambuddhassa, awakened. Namo tassa, bhagavato, arahato, sama, sambuddhassa, sadhya. So we started on this, I realized last night how, you know, to me it's very exciting, but how extremely... what would you say? Unsimplistic? What's another word?
Dense.
Idealistic? Huh?
Dense.
Dense. Difficult. It is. Like, because I love this teaching doesn't mean that it's easy to teach other people. Is that true? Mm-hmm. This is called interdependence. Teaching of interdependence. And it is the basis of the whole of the Buddhist path. It is the one thing why in Buddhism they don't say there is a God, they don't say there isn't a God. They say that's not the problem. Which I like that very much. It isn't a problem. That's not the problem. The problem is, what is the mind that perceives a God or doesn't perceive a God? What is the mind that feels suffering? What is the mind on which the whole movie of our existence plays? What is the nature of mind? And then what is it that causes different mind states to arise? Do you think you've been more than one person today? But you don't think of yourself, you don't say that, you know, well, I was many people today, do you? But you know, you can see yourself changing, can't you? Being exasperated because you can't find something and then finding it and then being, oh, so happy, of course that's where I put it, and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. Isn't that true? We have all these different selves that are continuously arising, aren't they? No?
Well, one thing I don't understand is when I notice a mind state or something going on, I don't, like, is that what you mean? That mind state is that other person? The minute I see it, then it feels like a different thing, like a separation.
Yeah, there
That's
is.
That's where I'm confused.
There's a difference between awareness and unawareness. You can have awareness of the mind states, or you can have no awareness of the mind states. Awareness is not a mind state. It's a neutral state when you just see it. Then if you see it and you dislike it, then that's another mind state, disliking a mind state. Does that make sense? Does that...
Oh, yes, it does. So when you say self, many selves, what does that mean in that?
It basically means that depending on the causes and conditions, very Buddhist way of saying it, Were you frustrated by anything today?
Yes.
What were you frustrated by?
A problem that I couldn't solve.
And was it a problem that you had to solve or a problem that you thought you should solve?
Both.
Okay. And then what happened? Did you solve it?
Yes.
You found a way around it. You found a way around it. So was that a different sense feeling of a self when you found a way around it than before you solved it, when you were frustrated with it? Or?
Well, I noticed different feelings.
Yeah.
I had it was a different quality of...
And did you see things differently?
Yeah, it changed the quality.
Yeah.
Of how I was feeling or how my mind felt.
And how you felt about your environment and how you listened to things. Mm-hmm. And all of your senses changed when that mind state changed. So who was the I that was sensing in one point and the I that's sensing another? They're sensing quite different things, so it's a different I. Okay. How do you define an I?
I define it as, I thought it was when you all of a sudden you notice that you're frustrated. The part that's noticing is the I, and the
that's
the
just called awareness.
Okay.
It's just neutral. You notice. If you get angry that you're frustrated, that's another mind state.
So the selves are different mind states.
Mind states.
Feelings are
and they arise dependent on causes and conditions. So if there's this cause and this condition is present, if you're in a theater where you're really enjoying the movie and loving every sound, and then somebody comes to sit behind you and knocks your hat off, just when you're about to see what was really going to happen, that's going to create one kind of... If you're sitting in a room and a kid comes along and he's playful and he knocks your hat off, it's not going to be the same reaction, is it? Is it? Why not? Because the causes and conditions create a different result. So this self comes for this self comes for that. This is, when you vote, it depends on who you've liked the most over a period of time, doesn't it? And that's the whole presentation of how people appear, or how your PR person tells them. Slightly sideways. Just good? And all that. There's like this whole kind of thing to evoke one particular kind of image. Which we then think is that person. Don't we? Is this okay? Are you following me? Are there any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Okay, so, but it isn't a fixed identity, and in fact it isn't even an identity. It's something that arises if the conditions are right and the causes are there to make it arise. If you flip the switch, the light will go on. If there's a light bulb. And it's not burnt out. And the electricity is already set up. If the causes and the conditions are there, and then the switch is flipped, then there's going to be light. So there'll be this quality arises dependent on so many factors, because when you try to understand the causes and conditions and what sets them off, they're coming from billions of different angles at the same time. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. That's sometimes a little harder for me to explain in a way that people like that. So do you think that, well, I felt like this because I couldn't solve the problem, but then, then that's not really it either. But where did you learn how to be frustrated in the first place?
What tapes are playing.
Yeah. And how did that start? And who, So it goes on, and the detailed impetus in it is humongous. So when the Buddha discovered that there is such a state as suffering, he said that there were three kinds of suffering. You know this? What are they?
Not having what you want. Having what you don't want. I'm not sure.
And not having what you want isn't really, I mean, that it's more like being subject to what you dislike.
Oh, okay.
And then being separated from what you do like. Those are, first of all, the suffering of the impermanence of happiness. You have noticed that, haven't you? Even when I was in Ottawa, I was actually the Buddha. Yes. Stephen Harper is what I'm thinking of. That was a real big mistake. Stephen Harper, the Pope was in Ottawa. Did you know that? Did you? He was there, and he and Stephen Harper were standing on a balcony. And the Pope said to Stephen, "I bet with one wave of the hand I could make everybody experience great rapture." And Stephen said, "Oh, I don't think so. Show me." So the Pope waved his hand and knocked Stephen Harper off the balcony. This joy, they were filled with joy. I don't know how I got sidetracked, and because I promised to tell you.
You slipped it in pretty good.
It's really good.
Though.
It's really good. And it's true. Every time you think of that, the rapture, you can just feel it bubbling up through your body. It's like. So anyway, that's for the Pope. So to be when you are caught, when you have what you are happy about, and then it ends. I have a friend who really likes to get everything just comfortable and going the way she thinks it should be when she's on retreat, just sitting this way with this long for, you know, and being comfortable with it, and she really will do anything to make that what's happening to her. And so then when she finishes the retreat, she says she's done a good retreat. But then she steps into the world, and she's not in control anymore. And she almost always crashes at the end of every retreat. Because she's so sure that establishing a certain level of happiness where everything is fine, thank you. It's fine, thank you. Everything is fine, yeah. I'm fine, you're fine, we're fine, yeah. It's fine here, isn't it? Oh, it's all fine. That is going to be, then, that's going to be who she is. That's what she's learned to do in retreat. But it isn't true. Just because she has figured out how to set a certain level of unawareness so that she can be happy. And that there's a schedule that nobody, no phones are going to ring or nobody's going to knock on her door. You know. In a bubble is not, the bubbles don't last. So the happiness that depends on causes and conditions are always subject to change, aren't they? All of those states of happiness are going to change. Is that true? So that is suffering, to be conjoined to what you do want is going to, and to really want to maintain that, that's suffering. And to be conjoined with what you don't like is suffering. We know that one's easier. The third one, the suffering of change. And that's the one that I'm talking about, is that when you aren't able to see the different mind states, which we think of as a self, see them coming and going, dependent on causes and conditions, we actually feel like there's this one I who is unchanging going through time and space. I'll tell you, if you don't get it before you're 70, you're going to be in deep shit. I really recommend you pay attention, all you young people. except for Bob.
Too late.
He's older than me. that whole thing of the truth of the suffering of change. That every second, the Buddha said, every second there's a shift in reality. Is that interesting to you? So, you know, I like this book a lot. I really recommend it. The third level of suffering, the suffering of conditioning, addresses the main question. Why is this the nature of things? The answer is because everything that happens in samsara is due to ignorance. Under the influence or control of ignorance, there is no possibility of a permanent state of happiness. The change is happening continuously in milliseconds, but we ignore that, don't we? I'm going to do this to the garden. See the things I planted. They're going to be great for years. Right? Don't we do that? Some kind of trouble, some kind of problem always arises. So long as we remain under the power of ignorance, that is, our fundamental misapprehension or confusion about the nature of things, then sufferings come one after another, like ripples on water. So this third level of suffering refers to the bare fact of our unenlightened existence. What is it that we want? We all beings desire happiness. But even when you are happy, it doesn't last. Is that true? Odds of beings desire to be free of suffering. That's true, isn't it? Isn't that right? We have instincts to pull away from heat. We're born with this push, this urge. The reason it is called the suffering of conditioning is because this state of existence serves as the basis not only for painful experiences in this life, but also for the causes and conditions of suffering in the future. Now, there are different schools of Buddhism that say that the dependent origination arises over three lifetimes, and there are ones that say that's not possible because there is no such thing as a self who goes through three consecutive lifetimes. But I'm not going to bore you with all that stuff. Verses in the middle way offer a useful way of looking at this third kind of suffering and help deepen our understanding of it by laying out the emphasis on reflecting upon the subtle level of the transient and permanent nature of reality. It is important to bear in mind that there are two levels of meaning here. One can understand impermanence in terms of how something arises, stays for a while, and then disappears. We all know that because we all go shopping. That's pretty straightforward. This level of impermanence can be understood quite easily. We should add that on this level, the dissolution of something requires a secondary condition, which acts as a catalyst to destroy its continuity. You want me to add that or not? You want me to take that out? there's always something that will cause the dissolution. From this more subtle perspective, the obvious process of change we have just described is merely the effect of a deeper underlying and dynamic process of change. So basically saying that whenever something comes into existence, it's already passing away because it's changing all the time. What it was coming into existence is no longer coming into existence, it's in existence. It's no longer in existence, it's in the second moment of existence, it's in the third. And each one is a dissolution of the one before. When you're 2 years old, you're not 1 year old. When you're 1 year old, you're not 6 months old. When you're 6 months old, you're not 5 weeks old. Is that true? And every moment is a dissolution of whatever went before. So not only is there the dissolution that we see in coming into being, existing, and passing away of, you know, a book or a banana, but there's also every moment that it is a banana, it's also becoming a non-banana in incremental ways. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. So then from that analysis comes what I was talking about yesterday, about the difference between the two truths, absolute truth and relative truth. From that analysis of seeing the incremental truth of impermanence, then you realize the absolute truth. There is no such thing as subject-object. Do you get what I'm saying, or is that too fast?
You're quick for me.
Okay. There are two ways of seeing change. You can see change in slow coming into being, existing, and passing away. Or you can see when something comes into being, and then the next second, it's come one more second. 2 seconds into being, it's no longer what it was 1 second into being. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
3 seconds, it's no longer what it was in 1 or 2. 4 seconds. Is that true?
Yeah.
So every second, indeed, every millisecond of existence is change.
Yeah.
So there isn't any time, actually, where anything can be said to be fixed. It's movement.
Mm-hmm.
So when you actually look at that and see that, then there is a clear understanding that there is no such thing as subject-object because they're changing incrementally, continuously. So that understanding, when it is fully developed and becomes a total revolution of your consciousness, is called absolute truth. That there is no subject-object duality.
When you accept it.
When it is totally understood. Yeah, when you accept it, when it's there's no you then, when it's just totally understood, when this is seeing inner and outer, no difference.
Mm, I see. So the concept of an I seeing another other that is the object in relation to the I is an illusory, it's an illusion because of the fact that moment to moment to moment we string together those moments into an I that sees
an
object,
and sees a relationship between them,
yeah.
And creates
and
a reality,
on a relative level,
which
it's
is continuous
there,
and changing, and based on the past and projected into the future. Yeah.
But on another level, it is there. It's real in terms of everybody in the room agrees. You're sitting in front of a table.
Not everybody in the room would agree with that. Somebody who's blind wouldn't see the table.
Okay. But I'm saying all of us in this room here share a collective reality that we agree on.
If you ask each of them to describe the table after we're not in the room, or describe how I was sitting, or whether I was leaning on my right arm or left arm, everybody would have a different story, wouldn't they?
I agree. I'm not. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we share a kind of temporal agreement, and that we live in a subject-object
That's right. That's
environment.
Right. That's right. That's right.
So there is a subject object on one
but
level.
I too use concepts, yes, said the Buddha. But what did he say?
But I am not fooled thereof.
But I am not fooled thereby. You know, to be able to operate within the conceptual world is compassionate. You can't be compassionate until you can do that. But you're still caught by relativity if you don't see the incremental change continuously occurring. And you saw those videos on the six senses. And what did it say about sight? Where do you see things?
In the brain.
Not out there.
It's all created in here.
So are you actually seeing the table in front of me? Or if we go away into another room and I ask everybody, you know, we get involved in, you know, listening to somebody play a weird song on the auto harp or something, and then I ask somebody to describe the table up here, will there be different descriptions?
Yes.
So
but the table doesn't cease being in the room because we're
there. No, I'm not saying it that. I'm not saying it doesn't. They say that it isn't that there isn't a table here. It isn't that there is a table here. It's that it is ineffable. Yes. It transcends description. It transcends. Description is always in relation to. Description is always in relation to. So how to describe it is transcendent. In a relative world, it's here, but it's a bunch of atoms falling off. You know, like how many times I've said to you, every 6 years, every atom in your body changes. Where are they going? Did they have a note? They're leaping off all the time. And other ones are leaping in. But at a slower rate, unfortunately. Yeah.
So are we looking, we're not looking to have everybody thinking the same way.
Heaven, hell, and earth, no. Everybody is thinking the same way based on subject-object. That's already happening. Do they see the same objects? We all say hello. If the threat or the reward is big enough, they could probably get most people to, but there's always going to be somebody who won't. It's an interesting one, isn't it? It's like, it's really hard to wrap one mind around this one, isn't it? And they can really understand how Buddhism isn't that interesting to many people. Like, they don't mind being, you know, doing the chanting and all of that. But to really look at, okay, what is it that this teaching says? It says something very specific and very straightforward. That there is no inherent existence. There is continuous change and flux. That isn't how we feel comfortable. We don't like to buy a new car and then think you're driving down the road and continuous change in flux. We like to think, ah, look at my new car, that's going to last forever. And I'm going to love it always just as much as I love it today.
A really good practice would be to go to a place called Pick Your Part.
Pick Your?
Pick Your Part, it's called. It's an auto parts place. It costs $2 to go in and you'll wander around and they have fixed prices for objects. You can buy a car seat of a particular type, whether it's a bucket or a recliner or a bench, all for the same money. One's $7, one's $14. They're really cheap. All these parts of these automobiles are all broken down into their incremental bits.
right.
And then priced accordingly, like a smorgasbord. And your people go in, and they, a lot of curbers go in there once they, you know, make cars in their backyards and then sell them. But that wonderful car that you lusted after, that had these particularly comfortable seats that you put such value on, and there's that sucker lying there in varying states of decay.
Yeah,
it's like a meditation on the decomposition of a body in a way. It really puts things into perspective in terms of.
Lovely.
Like when you're talking here, and I'm thinking, and we sell the days of our lives in slavery to whatever horrible job that we're doing that we really don't like, but we're doing it anyway, so we can afford this crap that we love so much that just decays
it's
and turns
continuously
into
continuously dissolving.
Yeah. I mean, that was one thought anyway. That
and it's true. I mean, you know, like how much hunger is motivated in our society. He is made to be the motivation in our society for the next, what they call becoming in Buddhism. It's called becoming. It's like, you've heard me talk about the carrot. It's the stick. It's becoming. About to get. Always about to get. And that is a lot of how our lives go, isn't it? Who could sit still absolutely for a minute without becoming coming up in the mind? Not even about stopping the breath, why would you? But or stop the heart from beating, or the digestive juices from flowing, or any of that stuff, the wax coming out in your ears, or don't stop any of that, but stop the mind from craving and just be present. And according to the Buddha, it takes a very powerful mind to actually, more than just a glimpse, which is all we're doing tonight, to actually perceive the noble truth of suffering, to actually perceive especially the suffering of change. That everything is incrementally changing continuously, inner, outer. It's quite fascinating in that I really So knowing that, then what is this thing about nirvana is peace? Well, what creates the suffering of change? Ignoring change. And especially ignoring that the self is changing all the time. That one's harder, as you've noticed. Because each mind state comes up complete with a past and future. Comes complete with, you know. And then something changes in the environment, that mind state goes away, and another one pops up. You know, remember me doing the pop-up book with you? So there's a theme going on about, you know, how much I like my mother's cinnamon cookies, and you turn the first page, and there's this whole pop-up saying, of the bowl, mixing bowl, and the cinnamon and everything, and then, oh yeah, but I dropped an egg, and you turn the page, and oh, there's an egg splattered all over the floor, and that's another mind state. Oh yeah, but then there were more eggs in the fridge, and that's... Do you understand that? Like, you can see that little moment of disappointment that comes in the process of where you're doing something, but because we're so intent on becoming, on what we're going to get. Am I making sense? And for me, the really important thing is to be able to recognize how many different selves you are in half an hour, or a day, or even an afternoon, you know, just even to be able to say three or four of the different mind states that arise depending on causes and conditions. And when you're playing with your grandkids, there's one self. Then when they go home, there's another self. Oh, look, they broke that bowl. Oh, damn. Is that reasonable?
Mm-hmm. But that also means that everything is arising, dissolving, arising, dissolving. That's both. It's only in that kind of system that we can be different. That you can, whatever is watching the mind states arise and dissolve and arise and dissolve.
That's called awareness.
Yeah.
To develop awareness is the only gate, is the only ticket to freedom.
Yeah, because it's not, then it doesn't become so much.
Because then you're not attached to the perceptions.
Yeah.
You're perceiving the perception. You're perceiving the perception of I'd like to be attached to that.
Yeah.
You're actually aware of it. It's a neutral state.
Yeah.
It's a neutral state. You can perceive the perception. Neutral state is the most profound and beautiful gift that we have, especially as human beings. That when something is bothering us or causing us harm, we can put our mind in a neutral place and not dislike the harmful. Because when you dislike something that's causing you problems, does it get better? Does it get worse?
Because it's you're developing a habit of it.
Yeah, but you're also, your focus is stronger.
It's really strong.
And you know, and dislike really attaches to what's wrong and cuts everything else out. Dislike has really good focus, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We talked about that before. Mm-hmm. Neutral. You know, you can, you know, I don't know if I ever got you to pinch your arms.
Yeah.
You know that one. You pinch your arm and you look at it and you really hate it and then you... You know what? I've done that so many times. I actually had a bruise on this arm, but not on this arm. Not only, and I was pinching this one equally hard.
Really?
And I actually had a bruise on this arm and not on this arm. Isn't that curious?
You lock the energy in.
I lock the energy in, yeah, probably.
That focus is so...
Yeah, it's very tight.
Directly. Yeah.
So like when you actually dislike something... You don't see as much around it, so you don't have as much option. When you put your mind in a neutral place, when you open your mind, you can still feel the what you dislike, but you're not caught by it. I too use concepts, but I'm not fooled thereby. When the mind is neutral, when you can just have bare awareness of something, without like or dislike, you're not caught, then you can actually make choices.
But that's only possible because everything is constantly changing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that is what the teaching on Paticca-Samuppada ends up saying. Because there is change, there is liberation from change.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a fixed state, you're damned in hell, or... No, because there is change, there is liberation. So the Paticca-Samuppada, or the whole law of dependent arising, that talks basically breaking down each moment of contact of the senses, and then feeling and perception and mental formations and all that incrementally breaks down each point of it, is basically showing how when you can see even some of those points of the breakdown, then you can at any moment become aware and not take the next step. Mm-hmm. And so that's the second part of the Paticca-Samuppada is with the arising, if there is the arising of ignorance, but there is no contact, then that doesn't pass on with, and so forth with each of the steps. And that's exactly the point. To understand that when you do actually accept that everything is changing and there is no fixed identity, from moment to moment, if you really actually do think that every cell in your body has changed in 6 years, and you didn't notice, you didn't write a note for all of them, or
you didn't keep a journal. Yeah. And in the end, that's also, it means that you don't, not so hard on yourself for not getting it in the last moment, because it's always...
It's gone.
And then the possibility is always coming.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
The whole thing about getting it right has got to be the greatest suffering that I know in our age.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so many people, I could cry to it just thinking about all the people I talk to who are caught by this resident expert who is like a supreme torturer. I always tell them to read Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. Just that first chapter. Wait a minute, who is the self who can't live with the self?
I was listening to Jack Kornfield giving a talk on a podcast, and he had this story of he was at one of the Dalai Lama's teachings in India, and it was on awakening or enlightenment or something, and this woman stood up and said, "Sir, I understand all of this, but what I really need to know from you is how long will it take me to become awakened?" And he said, the Dalai Lama looked at her and then put his hand, hid in his hands, and just cried. Mm-hmm. Just cried.
Yeah.
And just listening to him tell that story.
Yeah.
The soul.
Yeah, no little pinnacle sticking out of the waves of the ocean beating up everywhere. No little pinnacle on which this self is safe. No self. And that is how we feel when we go through the day, don't we? We feel like we're a separate entity, steady, going through, I got up this morning and now I'm doing this and then I'm going to do that. And it feels like that, doesn't it? But to actually check and see, you know, how many selves have I been in the last 20 minutes? Just do that 2 or 3 times a day. Do you think you might learn something from that?
Mm-hmm.
I think I do it, and I think I learn a lot from it.
What?
I was just joking to myself, I'll try harder tomorrow. Forget it.
I'm crying. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
When you talk about seeing a state arising and then if you can see it before it, I can't remember the word.
Before it sets off.
That's how I quit smoking last time successfully.
Yeah.
Is I finally realized that...
Just watch the impulse arise.
Well, I had this insight that I finally realized it's not the tobacco substitute, drugs, sex, rock and roll, whatever. It's the object. So I all of a sudden I went, okay, it's desire is the root of all of that. So I could see the desire arising and I go, okay, you son of a bitch, I see you. I'm not talking to you.
Mm.
And then I didn't get into a dialogue with the object.
Right.
Because as soon as you start, because I've tried to quit a lot of times, and as soon as you're talking to the cigarette, you're going to get screwed.
There's no way, it's only a matter of time.
Win.
Get up in the middle of the night and sleepwalk and have a cigarette.
Yeah. I used to have dreams that I had a cigarette and wake up in the morning and go, oh no. And then you go, oh, it was a dream. Yeah. After I had quit.
Yeah, but, exactly.
But the object Like once but the
how to do it without forcing? That's the question. Like, from that's what calm abiding is about. Because you can force the mind, but then that means you're making.
Well, I said it forcefully, but what happened
yeah,
was.
Yeah, but you're basically I would, saying, I see you and I'm not going
there. Yeah, it would be like it would be so quick because you knew you only had that moment to not do it.
Yeah.
It was like.
Yeah, oh yeah, okay, there's the urge. Next. No. Oh yeah, there's the urge.
It was very gentle. But it was a really powerful insight because.
Yes, it is. It is a very powerful insight. It is very powerful.
So now it occurs to me I need to do that with food.
Or lots of things, you know, just watch, just to be able to see why there's a self. You know, like, just very straightforward. I mean, why not with neutral things? Why not just think, why is there such a strong attachment to being a self? I mean, isn't that an interesting question?
Yes.
And it's not that you're trying to destroy anything, you're just trying to look through the blindness. Because I guess the idea of a self is like this huge envelope that we're walking around in, isn't it? Doesn't it just sort of block off anything? Everything is relation to the self, isn't it? I know I'm pushing it a bit tonight. I hope it's interesting to you. In some ways, this is Buddhism 101, but you don't very often hear it taught in North America. This is really what Buddhism is about. Why do you develop awareness? So that you can actually be aware of the dependence of contact with clinging, with desire, with right? And see them as they are. Do you want me to go through the 12 links? Just name them all, just as an example. I know them in Pali, but I'm not sure I would get them right in English, so I'm going to look for them here. I'm doing this book. He chanted it. It's what Ananda Bodhi made us learn all this Pali. Avijja Vijaya Sankara Vankara Vijaya Vijnana Vijaya. Ignorance of Avijja. Dependent on ignorance arises Sankara, mental formations. Then our mental, like relating what you think you see out there to your past. Right? What you were saying about vision. Mental formations, dependent on mental formation arises consciousness, the sixth sense consciousness. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, mind. Then the other data comes in. And dependent on the sixth sense, then comes mind body and the rupa, the self. And wait a minute. I'm just saying, I need you to check and go and go and when you are now, when you are. Vijnana is just the mind, and then mind, body, then the sixth sense basis, consciousness. When there is ignorance, there's a mental formation. Then there's going to be consciousness of that mental formation. Then there's going to be awareness of the mind, body. Then there's going to be the sixth sense basis are going to jump into being, and the sense basis. And there's going to be the awareness of contact. And when there's contact, then there's going to be awareness of feeling, like dislike or neutral. And awareness of feeling, then there's going to be craving, want to do what you did before. And when there's craving, there's going to be attachment. And there's an I who wants that. And when there's attachment, there's going to be becoming. Going to get it. Becoming, there's going to be the next moment, birth, a new person grabbing it. Birth is going to be old age, death, suffering. That's the 12. And they happen in nanoseconds. And this was the Buddha, when he had an experience of transcending subject-object in subject-object awareness, and went into the awareness beyond subject-object, to what they call absolute reality, from relative truth to absolute truth. Then he sat in that state of absolute truth for quite a period of time, and then he thought, how will I would like to share this. Who would I share it with? Who would understand it? And then he went through looking at how he would share it by how his body and mind worked in the relative world. This was the first teaching from his experience of transcendence that he came to, that he wanted to pass on. Then he started looking for people to pass it on to. And he had this one friend who had studied with some of the same teachers he had studied with. But he looked for him, and was no longer limited by the relative time, so he could see people's energy. And he realized that person had died, so he couldn't go and share it with him. And then he thought about other people, and eventually he came to, those 5 monks that I was doing practice of starving myself with, they actually were really determined to learn something that was true. They're the only people I can think of that might be able to hear this. So he went out there. And they saw him coming, and they said, oh, here's that rotten guy who eats, let's throw stones at him. Let's just ignore him. But as he came closer, one of them noticed something different about him and stood up and bowed. And the other one sort of looked, and then they said, come and have a seat. What have you got to tell us? And called him by his old name, and he said, I'm not that anymore. I am a Buddha. I am gone beyond. And I said, what do you mean? He said, dependent origination. This was really the beginning of the teaching, and this is not saying there is a God, not saying there isn't a God. It's not about that. It's like, how do we create a self that feels permanent? When everything in our history shows us how impermanent the self is, how do we forget that? How do we not see what we know? How do we ignore? It's an interesting question.
So how do you stay in the real world?
Well, what is the real world? Is
that David Bohm? But instead of going into becoming like a monk or a nun and living in a cave, or do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, I see. How does one do that? Well, I think the best way to do it is to develop the practice of awareness of mind states. Awareness of mind states, just like, maybe 6 times a day, just try to be able to perceive your perception. When you're looking at something, perceive, what is the mind state that's perceiving this? And so that you can start to develop an ability to identify the neutral mind and actually start to practice it more. Because that's the most important step. And most of our society is not based on neutral mind, is it? Not at all. Not at all. But, you know, like watching yourself be a failure and watching neutral mind, watching that sense of self being a failure and just being neutral about that. Wouldn't that be different? Wouldn't that just be, oh, this is a mind state? Wouldn't that start to break down, that sense of a fixed identity? I don't think there's a better way than watching those different mind states that have very strong attraction. Who cares why? So boring. From the very no beginning. Whenever that was. Is that useful, Toby? Mm-hmm.
It's just, I feel like I'm inspired to want to experience this.
Excellent.
And in my everyday life, I have moments of awareness, but a lot of it, you know, I have all these selves happening and there's no awareness, right? I'm just doing whatever and then I bring it back.
Yeah.
But part of me is like, I can understand why people would want to give it all up and just focus on this, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know if you can do both.
Well, I think you can. I mean, there are people who have done that, but you have to really build the aspiration and you have to develop enough of a pattern. So I found one time, you know, you used to be able to, the first watch I ever got was one that I could get to go ding every 2 hours or something. So I had a watch like that. So I would go ding and I would immediately just focus on whatever I was focusing on, loving kindness or perceiving the perception or whatever it was. It takes like 2 seconds and nobody needs to know you're doing it. You don't have to leave the room or anything. Just have to stand back and see the room. See the room that's looking. And then from that training, the aspiration grows and then the desire for what you really do want to be able to do opens, and the sense of being able to think of how many people you could help if you actually did experience this, and would that be a better job? Might make it not leaving the world, but entering the world. Maybe that dichotomy would change. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Notice this beautiful gold light in your hearts. This energy was tinkling through all your cells, up and down, front, behind, right back, four quarters. Moves through your skin, just trickles out your pores everywhere in all directions, moves through the walls, the floor, the ceiling. Fills this house, just does it to the neighborhood, goes down into the earth. Moves out through all Edmonton, through all Alberta, through the world, just moves out everywhere. Above, below, right behind, right in there, four quarters. Just washes everything with this gold light, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered, by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered, by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. So thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. Yeah.